Hello and welcome to Beyond the Veil episode 9. Today we're talking with Brian Henderson Ward, fellow with a lot of feathers in his cap, also a fantastic musician. So we're going to pop on a song of his just now. I'd love for you to have a listen. I hope you're enjoying your Sunday with a glass of red, bottle of beer, lights turned down, nice and cruisy. So here we go. We are going to listen to Brian Henderson Ward. This song is called Water Under the Bridge. I hope you enjoy it as much as I do.
God knows we've grown apart, and so there's a mountain to be moved here, I know. Still I set my eyes on you. I can't change this point of view. The past can never change, we're here and now. Water under the bridge is too much.
That was Water Under the Bridge by Brian Henderson Ward. Brian is a fantastic musician to start with, but also, like I said, has a few feathers under his cap. Former president of the Australian Songwriters Association. Just the name, but a few. And he hails from, he's based at the moment in Sunbury in Victoria, just outside of Melbourne. So how are you, Brian? You having a good day today?
I'm having a great day, James, and thank you so much for the opportunity to have a chat with you on your show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, more than welcome. It's an honour to have you here. Brian, we just listened to a song called Water Under the Bridge. I just want to kick things off with, first of all, what this song sort of means to you. Whereabouts were you when you were penning this song?
Well, you know, that's interesting that you ask me that, because as a songwriter, you tend to write a lot of songs throughout your life. I'm nearly 60 years old, and some of the songs that I've written from 35 years ago. That song happens to be, I wrote it 35 years ago, and I only just recorded it a few days ago. So a song can evolve over time.
Fantastic.
And that song didn't evolve very much, actually. I wrote it pretty much how you heard it there, and it was a great experience to just finally record it and get all the harmonies on and hear it in, because it had been in my head for all those years and written into my little red book.
Yeah.
But to actually hear it come to life has been a really special experience for me.
Fantastic. And so where did you record this one?
Okay, I recorded that one in my lounge room.
Awesome. I tell you what, that sound is brilliant for a lounge room recording. I mean, you could believe that was done in a studio.
Well, yeah, I have had some very complex studios in the past where I've, really dedicated space to and filled it up with lots of gear, flashing lights and all sorts of things. But these days I tend to try to keep it as simple as possible.
Sure.
And believe it or not, that whole track was recorded on a little 8-track recorder, digital little 8-track recorder, with several bounce downs to make it all work so that I could fit all the tracks on.
Fantastic.
It's amazing what you can do these days with very small equipment.
Yes.
In fact, there's a one of the pieces of equipment that I really love is it's called a Boss BR80. It fits in your pocket. It has several drum kits on board. It has a bass modeling, so you can just play your acoustic guitar and end up with a bass line. So you've
Fantastic.
Got your drums and your bass, and you've got 8 tracks to play with. And if you have a little computer with you as well, the possibilities are endless.
That is really cool. So, just for everybody out there, what was that called again?
That one was recorded on, the Zoom R8.
Zoom R8?
Yes, it's a tiny little thing. It can be battery operated, so you can actually record your songs in the bush.
Fantastic.
And it's just a wonderful piece of kit.
Yeah, that sounds cool. So years ago, I had a Fostex digital 8-track, and that used to bust down to a CD, and you pop the CD there, and it'd give you everything. It was fantastic. I loved it.
Oh yeah, I've had a few of those kind of machines in the past myself.
Yeah.
But what you get nowadays that you didn't get back then is guitar and amplifier modeling. So you can turn your acoustic guitar into a Fender Strat through a Marshall amp and then accompany it with bass and drums.
Sure.
All in the one little tiny unit. So being able to record something that sounds spectacular on a small unit is now really possible.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. That's really cool. Mm. So, I mean, look, the song, Water Under the Bridge, I mean, for me, I took that as a bit of a love song. Was that what you intended that to be?
Absolutely. It came to me after a relationship breakdown and You know, in some ways, I wrote it as a very young man, and my first love, if you like. And, you know, I was sort of suggesting in the song that no amount of water under the bridge is going to be too much.
Sure.
Turns out that it was a bit too much.
Yeah, well, let's not let the truth get in the way of a good song, right?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, when you write a song and your heart and your emotions are involved,
yes,
you know, when that song comes to life and other people hear it, of course they can relate to it in their own lives, and I captured that moment in my own life, and I hope that it reaches out and touches someone. Who needs to hear it, you know?
Yeah, and 100% right. And I think that's the beauty of the universal language of music. You can take so much from it, not just lyrics, but feel, emotion. It's kind of special, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think songwriting works in several ways. It can be therapy for the author themselves.
Sure.
Like when I actually feel quite sorry for people that go through a whole lot of pain in this world and can't write it out.
Yeah.
I mean, at least I have this outlet. So when I feel pain, when I go through a hard time, I can write it out, and it helps me to understand and to move on. And for folks that don't have that outlet, I just wonder, how do you get through?
Yeah, 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 100% right. And I mean, it's, you know, to be able, and a lot of, you know, psychiatrists and counsellors will say, you know, write the letter, you know, but never send it or never give it to anyone else, just write it down. And the power of doing that is immense.
Well, it's amazing, isn't it? Because when you write something down, it comes into the world and therefore has power. So, just for example, if you write a five-year plan of where do you want to be 5 years from now, I almost guarantee you that if you write those things down, you will be there in 5 years' time.
Yeah, it becomes a reality, doesn't it?
It does. It brings it into the world. It goes from just some vague concept that's just swirling around in your head into a reality in the world. Write it down and make it so.
And you know, that brings me to another point. When it is just swirling around in your head, or, you know, I like to think that it swirls around in the ether all around us. And I think if you don't take the opportunity to write that down, that could be lost and almost picked up by somebody else. You know, the feel, what am I looking for? The concept of the song. You know, I can't count the times I've heard something in a song and I've gone, you know, years ago, I remember writing something very similar to that, but I discarded it. Now, that could just be me and the way that my head works, but I believe there's more of a spiritual connection to songwriting than what we give it credit for.
Absolutely. There is a supernatural element to songwriting. I believe that some songs actually choose us to come through.
Sure.
So if you're open to the ether, then songs can come through you. They're waiting to be born, and they're waiting for the right person to come through, and it feels like that.
Is
that the absolute truth? I don't know, but I can certainly tell you that there are songs that I've written that at the end of that song I'm wiser for writing it. Therefore, the song has taught me something. It came through me and taught me something. And I'm not sure if all art works that way, whether people that express themselves through painting or dance feel that as well, I'm not sure. They're not my genres, but when it comes to songwriting, I'm definitely open to the idea that some songs are looking for the right person to come through.
Definitely. Definitely they are. Look, you look at what's going on in the world at the moment with, you know, 5G networks and whatnot. I mean, the amount of music that is flowing through the air literally. Surely some of that's got to, you know, land somewhere. It's I'm very much with you on that concept, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and like I said before, the other thing is that therapy. So if you're writing honestly about and writing your thoughts out honestly, then it has that opportunity to touch people.
Yes.
And it also turns out that if you write truth into song, like just really solid truth, it can turn into comedy, because truth is comedy.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One example of that would be a song that I wrote not too long ago called Life Plays, or The Cruelest Trick of All, about
love
how
this
life
song.
Plays
yeah.
the cruelest trick by making you love her. And then taking yourself away at the end of life. So to write a song about death that actually makes people smile is, you know, that's magic.
Isn't it? Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, just playing with those words and moving the context of looking at death as a terrible, horrible thing. But yeah, I love the song. You know what? Just because you've just bought that, I'm going to pop that on quickly. This is what Brian's talking about, everyone. Have a really good listen to this song. It's very clever. And it gives you a really good insight into what we're talking about. So this is The Cruelest Trick of All.
Hey, all you smooth jazz cats, gather around me now. I got something to tell y'all. Life plays the cruelest trick of all by making you love her a little more every day before she takes herself away. If you want to burn, you end up in a urn at a party as an ashtray. Life plays the cruelest trick of all. As she's leaving, you stop breathing. You simply cease to exist at all. There's no coming back through that door. If we left you here, you would melt into the floor. If you're exhumed from where you're entombed and they find scratches on your coffin wall, life has played the cruelest trick of all. Your struggles are in vain, worms inside your brain. But where is your final resting place if you drop dead on a plane or get sucked into a hurricane?
What the?
Life has played the cruelest trick again. If you're killed in suburbia and nobody's heard of you, a hostage in a stolen car, your face gets mashed in a bad car crash and nobody knows who you are. There's a tag on your toe, it says John Doe, and nobody knows that it's you. What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do, eh? Life plays the cruelest trick on you. Life plays the cruelest trick of all. She's making you love her a little more every day before she takes herself away. You stop knowing, you stop growing, you stop coming, you stop going. You find yourself in a shallow hole. Life has played the cruelest trick of all.
Ah, The Cruelest Trick of All. What a fantastic song. I absolutely love that song. You know, if you're killed in suburbia and no one's heard of you, I mean, where do you come up with this stuff, Brian?
It's all good rhyming, you know. That's the most important thing.
And
oh, my Lord.
Look, like you say, I mean, ending up as an earner, as an ashtray at a party, I mean, come on, this is, it's, you've really just, you've taken the piss, but at the same time said exactly what you need to say, and it's brilliant.
Well, when my father died, I wrote a really heartfelt song for him, and I found myself in a level of grief that I couldn't control. I felt fine. I was just operating normally through life.
Sure.
But I'd, you know, be doing the dishes, and the tears would just roll down my face. And it was like the body went into a grief mode that the brain was not really comprehending. And I just was finding myself weeping at unusual spaces in time, in the shower or... something would remind me, and I would just, the eyes would just start, the tears would flow.
Yeah.
But, that's the grief process, and I guess it's different for everybody. So I wrote that song, Life Plays the Cruelest Trick of All, or The Cruelest Trick of All, in order to sort of cheer myself up about the whole subject of death.
Sure.
Because, you know, we all have to face it. One, they say death and taxes.
Yeah.
The only two things that we're assured of.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Given,
I think prostitution's in there too.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah. When you think about Jesus and his girlfriend, they did all right. So,
yeah, yeah.
But,
they did great, didn't they? Well, they say no one gets out alive, but that's, you know, if you're a Christian, that's bullshit, isn't it?
Oh, I'll tell you what. I don't want to offend anybody out there, but I love the fact that Jesus and Mary Magdalene seem to have had a thing, and that she was a lady of the night, and that that he loved her. I find that a powerful sort of picture.
Well, you could always wonder too whether or not he was the true writer of Roxanne. You know, it's,
oh yeah.
You know,
yeah.
All right, I might be pushing it a little bit far here. Look, I do notice first and foremost between the two songs that we've listened to today, extremely different genres. You know, you've got the Water Under the Bridge, which, you know, it's a beautiful, almost a ballad, a bit of a poppy ballad. And then
a country ballad, even
country ballad. Yeah, definitely, you can hear that. And then we've got The Cruelest Trick of All, which is sort of like it's jazz, but a very relatable sort of a jazz. I mean, is this something you're consciously doing, or is it just how the songs are presenting themselves to you as you write them?
Okay, that's a really good question. And my response would be that genres are only tools in the songwriter's toolbox.
Yes.
So why would someone commit to one genre?
True.
You know, that's all that I find that amazing. If I go to a club and see someone playing the blues, I'm enthralled for about three songs.
Yep.
And then after that, like, I'm a bit like, oh my God, all right, yeah, okay. Same.
Yes.
And I don't want to fall into that trap. So I do see all the genres, and like there's some of them that I'm not really capable of. I'm not sure that I could put a realistic rap song together, for example.
No.
But the genres that I am capable of utilizing, well, I want to utilize all of them. So The songwriter's toolbox, I love to refer to this because it is full of tricks. You have all sorts of things available to you, not only genres, but you've got key changes, you've got time changes.
Yes.
You know, you've got harmonies, you've got all sorts of things that you can bring out of that magic box to make what you're doing more interesting.
Definitely right. So, I mean, it's sort of akin to a carpenter that has all different size chisels for different jobs. He's not going to use the same size chisel for every single job he does. So that makes a lot of sense. And you've just made it sound simple, which is obviously not. But you know, for everybody out there, don't get stuck into that one. You know, don't get me wrong. If this is what you want to do, you go for it. This is all about you. But you know, try not to get stuck into that one way of looking at things. You know, look at a different angle, which is, I think, very much so what Brian's doing. Now, aside from your absolute talent in songwriting, we're also looking down the barrel. You were the former president of the ASA, the Australian Songwriters Association. Tell me a little bit about that. How did you fall into that particular role?
Oh, my God. Well, what happened was I actually entered a few songs into the National Song Contest, which is still running every year, everybody. And the National Song Contest from the ASA is a wonderful thing. And the awards night, if you ever get a song into the top 10, please attend the award night in Sydney.
Yep.
It is chock-a-block full of stars. It's a gala kind of thing with it's a magnificent networking opportunity, because a whole bunch of the stars rock up, the record industries and the publishers, they're all there. And but anyway, I won a couple of categories in the National Song Contest.
Sure.
And then I moved to Western Australia to be closer to my daughter. So when I arrived in Western Australia, I found that the ASA had no representation there whatsoever. So I contacted the ASA and asked them for permission whether I could represent the ASA and open an office in Western Australia.
Fantastic.
To which they gratefully jumped on board, said yes.
So, awesome.
I opened an office in Perth. And we started an event that we called Wax Lyrical.
Ah, I was getting to that, actually. Yeah, keep going. Sorry.
Yes. So we started Wax Lyrical in Fremantle, and then we ran Wax Lyricals all around Perth. And one of the most successful ones was in Leederville for a lot of years, at the Leederville pub there.
Yes. Yeah,
and,
yep.
And then I thought to myself, well... and it was running so successfully, and we were putting out monthly newsletters to the ASA members in Western Australia, and the national office actually were gobsmacked at how well we were running our West Australian branch.
And,
then I approached Channel 31 CTV there in Western Australia and asked them, could I please have some... camera crew to come and record some of these Wax Lyricals. The Wax Lyrical, the idea is that you only perform your own songs. It
right.
has to be original music.
Sure.
It's like a open mic night, but it's only for originals. You cannot perform a cover there. If you do, we turn the PA off.
So what year was this?
This was in 1998.
Right.
CTV said yes, and we started editing together a television show called Wax Lyrical, and then I thought to myself, we need these Wax Lyricals to run around Australia. But then I was contacted by the then president Colleen Zullian,
sure,
who said that he was going to retire from the ASA, and unless we took it on, the organisation would shut down.
Oh,
and that put a lot of pressure on us, and you know, I was horrified at the idea that, oh my God, so we have to run the National Song Contest, and I ummed and ahed about whether to take it on or not. Finally, my wife assured me, Brian, we can break this down into bite-sized pieces and we can get it done.
Fantastic.
And that's exactly what we did. And then what we did was install Wax Lyrical all around Australia, and then I got a bus. I put a film crew on it, and we travelled to every Wax Lyrical around Australia, recording and filming everybody, and making a television show.
Sure.
So that aired through Channel 31, which I know doesn't have a huge viewership, But it was an amazing achievement. It took 2 years to complete.
Fantastic.
And it was a journey that really gave me a huge insight into the songwriting community of Australia. And, I remain passionate about it to this day.
Definitely.
And although the Channel 31 has been closing down all around Australia pretty much, but they did air it throughout the country. So, that was a success. I remember running into a television producer in Broome, of all places.
Oh, cool.
He was recording an episode of Ocean Girl. And he came up to me and he said, Brian Ward, he said. He said, I've heard about you. And I was like, I don't believe it. You know, that's amazing. But he said, what you're doing is something that the commercial channels can't even afford to do. So keep going, son. Keep going.
How good is that? I mean, that's fantastic. And look, you said before, it's not a massive viewing audience, but I think the passion that you've got behind it sort of outweighed that. It's much similar to the show we're doing today. It's as it stands at the moment. This show is a Broome-based show that everybody in Broome can hear, obviously live on radio. And then we promote it via SoundCloud with a podcast version. With the hopes of maybe going national. So, very, very similar approach in the way of I just want everybody, original independent artists to be able to get their, not only their songs out, but explain who they are, what they're doing. And each interview that gets played, everybody gets a bit of information that they might be able to use for themselves. And they're not alone. You're not alone out there writing those songs and wondering whether or not they're good enough. You know what I'm getting at?
I know exactly what you're getting at, because my whole mission when I became president of the Australian Songwriters Association was to somehow create a pathway through so that musicians had some established pathway through to the industry rather than just relying on the sort of nothingness that was out there. When we did our tour of Australia and we'd go to every Wax Lyrical, bands and individual songwriters, they'd appear on stage, they'd do their three songs. At the end of their three songs, here's your DVD, here's your CD, here's a disc of photographs, here's everything you need to promote yourself.
Absolutely.
We did that for 16 acts a night all the way around Australia.
And I tell you, that's commitment, mate. Like that, just for everybody out there, that is commitment. To show up to one gig a week to record and to support, a lot of people find hard to do. And you're talking 16 a night. To me, mate, it deserves a round of applause. That's absolutely fantastic.
Oh, mate, it was a hard slog.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, we did it with no funding. It was self-funding.
Sure.
So we, for every venue that we played at, we would charge a fee of an example would be $500.
Yep.
And for every artist who appeared on stage that wanted the full package, they would pay us $100. So
yep.
It would be $1,600 from the artist, $500 from the venue owner.
Yep.
And that would get us, because the bus crew, there were seven of us. So we had fuel, we had accommodation, we had food, all those expenses. It would get us to the next town.
Awesome.
And we went around Australia filming all these artists and giving them these packages. And we went north from Perth.
Yep.
And we came in back across the Nullarbor, up to Tasmania as well.
Yep.
And we came in back across the Nullarbor. We made $200,000, and we arrived back in Perth with $20.
Yeah. Well, that's the cost of it all, isn't it? Like you say, you've got accommodation, you've got diesel, food, and the gear. It's not cheap to be the gear you need for filming and recording. It's that certainly back then there was a hefty price tag on that type of equipment and heavy equipment
there,
as well.
There was.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was. And the thing is that what we did is I felt that we were using technology of the time We were sort of ahead of our game a little bit because DVD recorders had just come out. We bought, you know, a couple of the first models of them, and so that through our vision switcher, the sound, we routed the sound, everything would be mixed down and go through to the thing, and it would be the best product that we could produce on the night.
Yep.
And some of it was absolutely outstanding. So, and you know, with some amazing songwriters around Australia, it was a real eye opener and totally inspirational to all of us.
Fantastic.
And the fact is that the crew was made out of unemployed musicians in Perth.
Yep.
Most of them on the dole. And they said to me, when I said, let's go around Australia and do this, and they said, what are you going to pay us? And I said, well, what I'm going to do is give you each $150 a week.
Yep.
And they went, what? Is that it? And I'm like, hang on. I'm going to give you accommodation. I'm going to make sure you have food. I'm going to make sure that there's beer.
Yep.
I'm going to make sure that there's tobacco for the smokers.
Yep.
I'm going to look after everything. You get your $150 a week, and you get to keep your dole check.
Awesome.
You're not paying any rent. And I convinced them to do it.
Mate, I'm absolutely spewing. I didn't run into you earlier because at that time I would have been about 19, 20 years old, and I would have been all over that.
Well, I've got to say, it's an adventure that will remain with me for the rest of my life. The boys and I, we're all really joined by that experience. And Chris Matthews, who's the West Australian Country Artist of the Year, according to Wham, in 2023.
Yeah.
He's actually visiting my house at the moment. He's here for a week. He comes by once a year because he's on a never-ending tour of Australia, and I always look forward to this time of year when he comes around. We write a couple of songs and we record together. So,
fantastic.
And he was on that bus tour. He had no experience of the industry before that, and when we did that tour, that launched him into his career.
Look, and it would have done, you know, because if you travel, you either love it and you don't want to stop, or you hate it and you never do it again. So
it's amazing.
It's funny because many, many years ago, and it would have been about 98, 99 in Perth, I actually played attended what I thought was an open mic night, but it may well have been a Wax Lyrical at the Leaderville Hotel. I played five of my own original songs. I was fresh out of the MIS TAFE course in Warrnambool in Victoria for the music industry skills.
The TAFE course in Warrnambool.
Yes.
Now, I did that. I did the Songlines course there.
That's right. So I did the Cert 3, and then I did the Songwriters course afterwards, I believe, or it was all the other way around. I can't remember. But that was with the beautiful Lynn Eales. That was fantastic.
Oh, Lynn Eales, yes. Now, Lynn Eales used to be in a band with me. Such an amazing singer. And
oh, the voice.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just a wonderful human being.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And look, the thing is with music these days, the amount of people I'm only 9 episodes into this show, but every single person I've spoken to, and a couple have been bands, and you know, so 3 or 4, and every single person has just been absolutely beautiful. You know, it's an honour for me to be able to do this, and it makes my life so much better, and also makes my songwriting a bit better, to be honest. So, you know, there's a lovely cheeky little upstroke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, back to the topic of some songwriting.
Yeah, sure.
And the supernatural idea that I have about it.
Yep.
When I was the resort musician at Ayers Rock for 7 months, and every day was like Groundhog Day. It was just the same day over and over again.
Yep.
And I was working lunchtime shows, dinnertime shows, and I'd have one day off per week. And on that one day, there was a time I went out into the desert and I looked at the rock as it was changing colours. And because my mother is Scottish, and I emigrated to Australia when I was 10 years old, and
okay.
I have these amazing memories of Scotland. And And I thought about, I looked at the rock and I thought about my own cultural heritage, if you like. And I wrote a song called The Tartan Heart. I don't know if you have access to it there.
Yeah.
It should be. So staring at the rock and writing a Scottish folk song. And when I wrote this song totally fictitiously, and then when I returned home to my Jenny, my lovely wife Jenny, she's a librarian, and she looked at the lyrics that I'd written and then looked into Scottish history and found out that it was true.
Fantastic.
It was like, oh my God, how did I connect with this unseen force that, like, it's a story of a brother who kills his own brother in battle over a woman. Really, that's what was underneath the song.
Sure.
And it turns out that there's a historical justification for it, and I didn't know that at the time that I wrote it. So how magic can songwriting be?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, it's that... We're only using, I think I heard along the way, we're only using sort of 10% of our brain power as human beings. And I believe that, I think it's the right side of the brain that's creativity. Is that correct? Is it right? I'm pretty sure it's the right. But so we're only using that 10%. So what we're not aware of is so much, is 90% of it. We don't even know how that works. So, you know, getting that feeling, like you were saying earlier, a song can choose you to come through you, and it feels like that's the case. And I believe that you're right. I believe that you're right. But look, I'm going to pop this on for you, for everybody right now. This is Tartan Heart, and you've just heard the story of how it was written. For me, I think this really will tell the story of the supernatural songwriting that we're talking about. We're not talking about ghosts coming down and penning the song for you, or you know, anything along those lines. It's about spirituality within the song. So have a good listen, and we'll be back in just a moment. This is Tartan Heart.
Heather Moore.
hills rolling down where the clan of MacLennan fought a battle 1564. When the crown and the cross and the Saxons from the south came to rule by the British law. The epitaphs written on the graves in the glen tell a history more than written word. God rest ye with the dead young Lachlan MacLennan, who died by his brother's sword. Did you die by your brother's sword?
Tart and Heart by Brian Henderson Ward. That's a lovely song, mate. That's a fantastic song. I really like that. And the choice of music, the choice of vocal, the choice of harmony, really not well, it dictates the sound of the song, but then the beautiful lyric and the meaning behind it just sets it right off. And the way it's put together as well. So that I really want to sort of touch base with you just a little bit on how you produce your songs. And I've noticed with three different songs that we've listened to so far that each song has been produced differently in the way of, the structure, or if you like the structure. So what kind of process do you go through with that? You know, is that a struggle, or is that just sort of how the song presents itself to you?
Well, I think the song demands its own. The song itself dictates what's necessary. So, for example, in that song, I needed a bagpipe player to come in at the end, and I was in Warrnambool at the time, and I asked around for a bagpipe player. And a fellow in his 70s came in with a set of bagpipes that were slightly out of tune, and I had to use a bit of chorus effect on him to at least make it a bit more palatable. But
sure.
it worked. And,
yeah. Oh, it sounds fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if you're going to write a Scottish folk song, obviously you want your twiddly D guitars and a bit of bagpipe in there.
Yeah,
if
definitely.
You're going to write a blues song, you want a bit of harmonica and whatever. So it really is about the arrangement. I always say that there's three phases to getting a song, and they are writing the song. That's the difficult part.
Yep.
They are arranging the song. That's equally as difficult. And then there's recording the song. I think that's the most difficult. So the three phases of getting a song through into the real world, they have to be gotten through.
Sure.
I recorded a song and realized that I've failed in the arrangement. It's a beautiful recording. It's a beautiful song, but the arrangement sucks.
Right.
Let's start again.
Yep. Okay. And with that, and I know myself when I was younger, I struggled with for lack of a better term, criticism of my arrangement of songs. I sort of felt that I owned what I've done. I want it this way, but as I've matured, if you like, a nice way of saying I'm old. I've realised that having somebody's input in that regard is absolutely it's something that I can't get. I can't buy. It's priceless.
It really is. If you get other people's heads involved, you end up with a better product, even though they may annoy the hell out of you on the in that process.
Yeah, definitely. So, what we briefly touched on the music industry skills course before. Now you've had an input with that, with facilitating these sort of courses as well through schools and prisons and whatnot. Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, okay. Yes, I've been into. For example, I ran a course for you guys in Western Australia. I ran a course in the Casuarina prison for a full Aboriginal class of inmates who or clients, as I'd prefer to call them.
Sure.
Where I taught the art of songwriting as best I could, and that was high security, and I had the most wonderful experience with those guys. It was just, I'm not sure what stories I can relate to you. And here we go. Once the class had all written their songs, I brought in some recording gear to record everybody. And that took a long time to get through security because everything has to be examined.
Yeah.
And then once I set up the recording studio in the classroom, I realized that I needed to cut some wires to plug the speakers in. And I needed some bare wires, and I didn't have any cutters with me or anything. And I turned around to everyone and said, "Has anybody got that ability where you can just pull wire off with your teeth or whatever, pull the plastic part off the wire?" And this fellow just came up and handed me a scalpel.
All right. Yeah, okay.
So I cut the wires and handed him back the scalpel, and I was very thankful. It was amazing because my wife is just coming by. Dinner's ready apparently. But anyway, that can wait. That can wait. There's more important things. Anyway, lots of experiences of going into schools and into juvenile detention centres and teaching the art of songwriting in order to get these kids and young people to be able to express themselves in a healthy way through either poetry or song that would help give them basically the skills that I take for granted, which is if I go through a painful time, I'm going to understand it through writing it out, expressing myself, and enjoying. It's alchemy. It's literally turning shit into gold. So when you get that knotted up feeling in your gut when you're under stress, well, you write that into a song that you actually love. How's that?
Yeah.
You're turning.
How powerful is that?
Yes.
Yeah, you're taking control. That? You're taking control of a situation that seems out of your control in every aspect, and then you're creating beauty out of that. Oh, I love that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, something that. You're turning all your pain into something you can be really proud of.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's amazing. It is literally alchemy.
Yes. Yes. No, you are 100% right. And look, to Brian, throughout what I'm looking at here, and I don't mean to blow smoke at all, but obviously the music that you produce is fantastic. You've got a talent for songwriting, arranging. Not only that, but you're a great musician as well. But then you're putting yourself out there. The president of ASA. You're running Wax Lyrical. You're doing courses. For people who need you to do courses, and you're doing all of this. Seemingly out of the goodness of your heart. And I know that along the way there's been reciprocation in the way of monetary payment and whatnot, but this type of thing, I akin to any kind of counselling or any kind of helping another human being. And I've got to say, Brian, it is really refreshing to talk to somebody who has that drive and need to help other people via music. And just coming on this show and talking to me about this, knowing you could be talking to any radio presenter in the country, and they'd be more than honoured to have you. But the fact that you've allowed me to do that with you today, it is an honour, and I'm very humbled by the fact that you've done that, and I really appreciate it. Thank you very much,
James. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I have to say that. There's something about the poor musician, the poor passionate musician, the starving, hungry musician, creates great songs. So it's not about the money. It never has been about the money.
No, I wouldn't imagine it was. No.
Yeah, and actually, I haven't made a lot of money out of it. And to this day, I refuse to put my songs on Spotify because I know that 0.0003% for every listen is just undercutting and ripping off the artist.
Yes,
and I just won't do it. So my music is exclusively held on at this point on the website that you're probably drawing it from now.
Yes,
which is Reverb Nation.
Yes,
and so anybody that wants to listen to a bit of my music, please tune into Reverb Nation. Look up Brian Henderson Ward. You'll find me there very quickly.
Yes.
And I have to say that my favourite song on there, I don't know if you've got time for it on the way out.
Yeah,
but
sure.
It's the song Crazy. And my dear, wonderful, beautiful Aboriginal friend Lee Morgan played the lead break on this song, which is absolutely extraordinary.
Well, I'll tell you that the song Crazy was on my list. I did have another one that I absolutely love, which was Jimmy Hauling Man, which reminded me of what I did a lot of years ago, packed up the car and took off.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
That was me hitchhiking across the desert in my early busking years.
Yeah.
And I'd be happy for you to send the show out on either of those songs, my brother.
Well, what I'd really love, and it, only if it's okay with you, well, I believe we've only sort of touched the tip of the iceberg here. Would you be adverse to popping back with me next Wednesday and having a little chat so we can put another show on for the following Sunday?
James, I would love to do that.
Look, fantastic. So, look, everybody, this is part one. part two next Sunday. So we pre-record this show. There's no secret there. And we have to because we're musicians and anything can happen. So we need to make sure that that's all covered. But it next, so this Sunday, guys, so tonight you've just listened to Brian Henderson Ward. Next Sunday will be part two of that, which is, again, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And I know dinner's ready. I don't want to upset fine. Jenny.
James, next week I'll look forward to talking to you about how you can time travel through songwriting.
I would absolutely love to be talking to you about that. So right now, I'm going to pop on Crazy. And this is Brian Henderson Ward, Crazy. And Brian, thank you again. And we will talk to you next week. So go and enjoy your lovely dinner. And thank you so much for your time.
Good night and God bless everybody.
No worries. Here's Crazy by Brian Henderson Wood.
I'm a little bit crazy, you don't mind. Ooh, baby, you can be so vague. It must be pure madness, babes, get involved. Though you made me crazy, I was crazy long before that. Look at how the moonlight shines softly to her face. I just want her lips to say my name.
Say it.
Let go of this crazy passion locked up inside. Though I made you crazy, you were crazy long before that.
Crazy by Brian Henderson Ward. What a fantastic song. What an awesome songwriter and what an amazing person. This guy has given independent music in Australia, all over Australia, the absolute love that it deserves. So you've been a little bit spoiled listening to him, and you're going to be even more spoiled next Sunday on part two of our chat with Brian Henderson Ward. So, guys, get out there, get some live music into you, go and find out what's happening in town, write some music, talk to your friends, jam with your mates, come up with some songs, stop doubting yourself and give yourself the best go, back yourself in, all right, because you'll be surprised what you can achieve just knowing that you've got what it takes. So, anyway, thank you again for listening in to Beyond the Veil on Galari Radio FM 99.7. Also, if you happen to miss any of these, you can pop on to the SoundCloud, or I sound like a grandpa then, you can pop on to SoundCloud and you can look up Beyond the Veil to catch up with any prior interviews. Also, if you'd like to come in here and have a chat, bring your music in, you can play live in the studio, we can do it by the phone, whichever way makes you happy, we'd love to have you in. All right, so all the best, have a lovely Sunday afternoon, evening, and sorry it's Monday tomorrow, but you know, doesn't matter because right now it's Sunday night and you're with Jim on Beyond the Veil. Hope you had a great time. And I've had an awesome time having you here with me. So have fun, and we'll talk next Sunday. All right, guys, take care. Cheers.